The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor, NetWealth Investments Limited, ABN 85090 569 109, AFSL 230 975, and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
I'm Patrick, Head of Technology at professional services firm Collins SBA. I'm a former financial advisor who just loves solving business problems and creating better client experiences using technology. Join me each week as we unpack the tech on offer to advice professionals, stay on top of tech trends, and help you break free from the analysis paralysis experience when building and maintaining a great tech stack.
Discover a world of advice. Join Matt Heiner, CEO of NetWealth, as he chats to industry professionals and thought leaders on the latest technologies, business models, changing demographic patterns, and general trends impacting wealth management. Listen at netwealth.com.au/between meetings. This ad is presented by NetWealth Investments Limited and does not consider individual circumstances. Seek professional advice and read the relevant PDS to determine if NetWealth is appropriate for you. Past performance is not a reliable indicator of future performance.
Today on the podcast, we're talking personal finance portals, client engagement, and open banking with Alex Chabotier. So Alex is the CEO and co-founder of Upworth, a tool that's designed to be the home for your personal finances and the first integrated mortgage broking tool that I've come across. All of this is powered by AI to drive insights as well as tools to help users make informed decisions and refinance or obtain home loan finance quickly and efficiently. Alex is ex-Quantum Black, which is the AI consulting arm of McKinsey. So I got pretty excited near the end of our chat when he started talking about the roadmap and introducing generative AI or a ChatGPT style tool to their offering. I started by asking Alex what the oldest piece of tech he still owns is and whether he still uses it.
Yeah, I like this question. Actually, it's a BlackBerry for the young folks around there. That is a mobile phone, if it needs a specification. And look, unlike Obama, I was able to ditch it before 2016. That I don't have any private security details, and I'm lucky enough to now have a phone that plays music, takes pictures, and movies. Yeah, I don't use it anymore, sadly.
Oh no, I think the good old sort of QWERTY keyboard and the tactile nature of clicking those keys, that is very cool. What sort of phone are you using now?
Oh, it's not very original. It's an iPhone, you know, like the. For my entire life, I was either having like a Samsung Galaxy, then I had, you know, the BlackBerry, and then I joined the workforce and my employer gave me an iPhone. You can't complain. I was very grateful because they got me into the iPhone matrix. Exactly.
Gotcha. And it's definitely hard to go back once you sort of experience
one
or two devices in that ecosystem. Okay. And what about AI? So are there maybe one or two cool ways that you're using that either personally or in your business?
Yeah, well, no, look, you're going straight to the core of it all, right? AI is at the core of what we do. And I've been involved in AI before it was called AI. In fact, you know, I was working at Quantum Black, which is McKinsey's artificial intelligence arm. And everyone referred to it as advanced analytics back then. And in fact, the whole idea of Upworth rests on using artificial intelligence, using technology to transfer personal finances. So to give you maybe a concrete example, we use AI to automatically reprice mortgages. So let's say you, Patrick, and you may have tried it, you know, in the platform and we created an account. Let's say you connect a mortgage. We will pull all of your information safely, directly using, you know, the CDR regime, so the official open banking regime, and we scan daily thousands of mortgage data points and price. We then are able to figure out all your personal characteristics. So it's not a generic repricing. We understand, you know, your LVR, the loan term, the remaining balance, the loan purpose, the repayment type. And we are then able to give you an assessment of whether you could make a meaningful saving. And we give you an alert, which you know, in my view, is as tremendous value.
100%. I think, as you sort of alluded to there, in preparation for our chat, I set up an Upworth account. And it feels like you've been incredibly thoughtful about the little things. especially just that onboarding experience is a really great way to build trust straight up and to sort of make a difference. And it's a very guided experience. So, yeah, I'm really excited to sort of delve into the product.
Thanks for saying, Patrick. Always great to hear. Thanks for the mention.
No problem. I'd love to know how this sort of came about and where Upworth sort of sits in that advice tech space. And, yeah, what really is the problem you're trying to solve here?
Yep. I guess, look, maybe for, you know, the people listening to us to understand a little bit more, let me tell you, you know, what Upworth is and where it sits, right? And so, and then I'll go into the problem we're trying to crack. I think what we are is effectively a technology provider focused on customer engagement. Our DNA is to be direct to consumer, which doesn't mean that, you know, we are not a great solution or a great companion for advisors or for professionals. Yep. I think it's very important to stress because, and you said it yourself, you know, having tried our product, the experience is seamless and is intuitive. And it seems like very important to us. What we are not is we are not an automated advice or robo advisory solution. We are not a practice management software. We are not a CRM. We are not a provider of manager panels. We are really that solution that helps you to form a 360 view of someone's wealth and to access unique insight. This is where we sit. We sit into this customer engagement, this digital companion.
Nice. And what problem do you think? Like what sort of made you go, like, as part of this journey with McKinsey and the sort of AI division, like, did you just wake up one day and go, we're going to solve this as a problem here with personal finance or whole of wealth? Like, how did that sort of come about?
Yeah, no, thanks for asking this question, because look, it goes back to like the why and like the passion behind it. I like to tell you that one morning I woke up with a genius idea. It doesn't quite work like this, so it was a bit of a longer process, but in fact, yes, it does connect to my personal story. And I guess, look, for years, I actually worked for large companies on you know, analytics transformation, including, you know, for a number of financial services firms in this country. And what I was seeing is like a treasure, you know, of data and very interesting problems. But at the same time, what I was seeing around me and my family with my friends is like a daily struggle, and myself included, with personal finances, missed opportunities, doubts, anxiety. And at some point, I realized, like, there's here a disconnect, right? And I came to the realization that for decades, the hidden and possibly most powerful advantage of bank has been their monopolistic hold on personal financial information.
Right.
The truth is that a few years ago, this paradigm changed with the introduction of what is called the open banking laws. In Australia, this is unfortunately, a little known yet by the consumer, the so-called consumer data rights, CDR regime. This regime is mind-blowing. It basically says you, as an individual, own your data. And as such, it empowers you to mandate any institution to share your personal financial information with any accredited third-party business of your choice. This is huge. And this was really the genesis of Upworth, because I realized all of a sudden, this data, instead of being privatized and used in the interest of private institutions, can be used in the interest of everyone. And so really, like, what you know, got me to be very excited about this is I saw the possibility to crack an incredibly complex problem, which is how do you, you know, unlock everyone's richest life, put it this way, how do you make sense of personal finance, and how do you solve this problem using data and using, you know, the breakthrough in terms of access to data and can, you know, AI and technological solutions that you can put on top. But that really, like, the key of it is the access to the data. If you had tried to do this, you know, like 15, 10 years ago, you would not have been possible. So I think really, you know, like the enablement was there, and the idea is giving back the power, you know, to the people and like being able to provide like incredibly more value. I think, you know, to conclude on that question you asked, Upworth fundamentally does three things. And it's all predicated on the idea that your money works better when all in one place. Number one, you can have a full view to understand your situation. That's the baseline idea, right? Around aggregation. Number two, you can unlock insights that only a full picture of your wealth allows. And finally, you can fast track your access to the best product and services by leveraging the info on site. This is our worth, effectively.
Nice. So three incredibly powerful and clear points there. I think you mentioned just before about the amount of data that's coming through. It can be sort of overwhelming when there's that sort of extent or quantity of data for just one individual. But I mentioned I set up an account. The way you've been able to just show what's important and sort of turn that sort of home screen into a really pretty and beautiful dashboard is really impressive. Would you mind sort of taking us through like the little components that currently appear on the dashboard? I know you've got some widgets that are maybe coming soon, but maybe talk about what's coming up there. But you've got things like the control tower, the emergency fund, like goal tracker, and even like a leaderboard, which for me was sort of just like, wow, like in terms of like my past experience as a financial advisor, the amount of times when I would get asked by clients like where they are compared to others in their age group, and all that I could really respond with was sort of trying to think of other clients in their age group or like similar circumstances, which is not data, like it's just subjective. But you've sort of taken that further with not just age group, but you know, Australian households as a whole, and looks like you've got sort of portfolio returns, which is maybe not so relevant here, but obviously great data to have as well. But yeah, I'd love to sort of hear more about how you sort of landed on those sort of dashboard or widget components and why they sort of appear there on the home screen and why you believe they're important.
No, thanks for asking, Patrick. And look, it is funny you're picking that one up, you know, the leaderboard, because we get very contrasting reaction to this, and they're very polarized. Either people love it, and they tell us, I've been looking for something like this to understand where I stand, you know, a little bit what you're saying from you know, your clients, or we have people who hate it, and they tell us, this is a source of anxiety. I don't want to know, Alex. Don't tell me this,
don't,
you know,
compare
I don't,
me. Yeah.
Exactly, don't compare me. Which is also the reason why, you know, like I think it's important to mention that that feature is level, you know, coming soon. So, and I think like what I'm about to say probably answers your question. Like, well, we do a lot of A/B testing. So at times, you know, we put some features out which are labeled as coming soon because it is actually a way for us to test if people want them to be there, right?
Nice.
So
yeah.
In that case, for instance, I think what we learned is it definitely has its place there, but for a subset of people. We are hearing that, you know, we need to profile people to understand exactly what they want to see there. And there are people who don't want to see that there. They want to see something that tells them, you know, how they can, you know, put money on the side, somewhere having like a saving. So that's a different, you know, behavioral psychological profile. So really like the answer to your question of like how we land what is there is A/B testing customer feedback, you know, iterations. To answer your first question, look, you saw it yourself, right? And like what you find there is it's a mixture of like descriptive data, which gives you, you know, a sense of like where you're at. For instance, you know, we automate your balance sheet and we keep it, you know, up to date with all the connections. We also, you know, allow manual entries when the accounts, you know, cannot be connected. You know, at times your private investments, you know, are not like easily tracked. And sometimes you have people who just don't want to connect an account. You know, they are had to just hit manually. So that is also allowed. So effectively you have this type of data, you know, like you have the view of how your net worth, how the amount of, you know, financial assets is evolving through time. And then you have a layer which is around, you know, insights. You mentioned, you know, the control tower. Well, the control tower, you know, is basically the place where we control for all the insights. So one insight is you connect your mortgage and we'll automatically tell you when it makes sense for you to refinance. Another insight is the amount of available equity you have built up in your real estate portfolio. So we will track this, we'll monitor it, and we will let you know in real time, look, you know, we monitor every month the price of your properties, the properties you have entered. We know your LVR if you connected a mortgage. We're actually able to tell you what is the amount of equity that is available there for potential next property investment. We don't give advice. We won't tell you, make a property investment. That's not our role. You know, we believe it's the role of financial advisor to do this. And we position ourselves as the purveyor of insights. The third level are tools. You mentioned a great one, you know, emergency fund. So, you know, on that one, for instance, we let you set an emergency fund target. We think, you know, prudential, you know, control of your finances is important. You enter the target and we will track in real time what is the amount of cash on top of your safety fund target. That's the kind of tool you'll also find in the system.
Nice. No, that's really, really insightful. And it makes a lot of sense just to learn that the coming soon features is really a good way to test whether someone's actually either looking forward to that or going.
Like, yes, it's a bit of a sneaky way to test, you know, what people like. It seems you like it, so it's a good indication, Patrick.
Yeah, switch it on. No, it sounds really good. And the control tower too, I think, is really like you've built that in a really simple way where you've got sort of the levers and the lights there in terms of everything's either lit up to show that you've got everything all sorted. But if maybe there's something there that's flashing and saying, you know, this needs to be sorted, it's an easy way to hone in on what is maybe, you know, rather than sort of a flurry of notifications of you need to do this, do this, do this. It's just one or two lights that say, hey, maybe these areas require attention, which is really
correct.
Cool.
Correct. And we in fact do both. You know, we prompt you with a notification in the system to tell you, hey, look, there's something to be checked. We will give you that, you know, an optic view where you're like, you know, okay, it's blue, nothing to do. It's orange, exactly as you said. You may want to consider, you know, that, all right.
Yeah. No, awesome. I guess just back on the sort of the product side of Upworth as a whole, do you normally get compared against any other sort of particular providers or even things like neobanks? Like, who else sort of comes up in that conversation?
I think, look, yeah, we obviously, you know, like people also like love pattern recognition. I mean, like myself, you for sure, you know, there's a tendency to be like, okay, what is it like to like categorize a product? And so I think, you know, what we hear is, and it depends who you talk to, when you know, we talk to advisors, people do tend to think about MyProsperity, which is a well-known platform in the, you know, financial advisor community. I think a big difference they've emphasized to us is the consumer lens, right? Mm-hmm. So most of the platforms out there will have been designed first and foremost for advisors, which you believe is not a bad thing, right? But where I'm going to is what we have heard is advisors telling us, look, our end clients don't necessarily use those platforms. Like we like those platforms. We struggle to actually promote those platforms with our clients. And so where we differ there is that the end client, which is your client as an advisor, but also my client, you know, as Upworth, is actually the person who's going to determine if the platform is of interest to him. So we took a very different approach, which is a tougher approach in fact, because like for anyone, you know, investing, it's much easier to go and talk to professionals, sell to someone who has 500 clients, like basically bill, you know, like at the volume and be like, fantastic. It's an easier go to market. And it has been the strategy of, you know, very successful companies in this country. NetWealth, Up24, that was around their business, right? But so offers are slightly different. So yeah, like that name comes up to mind, but with that major difference. And also, you know, other platforms we have heard of and think you have a good inclination there is like WeMoney, for instance. I think here again, interestingly, is feedback we get is, oh, it sounds like it because, you know, you connect your accounts and everything and that you get alerts. Where the comparison stops is when people get inside, they are like, actually, it's way more sophisticated. This is not, you know, just like getting an alert and something which is supposedly personalized, but is not really personalized. It's actually personalized. And in all product, and we are okay with that, actually assumes that you have a certain level of education about your finances. The truth is that it's not an entry level product. We could discuss about this. We would love to do that in the future. Right now, it requires a certain level of understanding. If you don't understand some concept, it probably wouldn't fit every client entering a practice.
Yeah. No, it makes total sense. And yeah, the point you raise there about how some other tools maybe not actually being built with the customer lens or the consumer lens, at least the sort of first priority, really sort of rings home. And yeah, even sort of in our business, going through that experience of trying to roll out a portal, and really it's to benefit the advisor or the advice team, and then the client, they're not secondary, but you can sort of tell that they are secondary when it comes to logging into the portal, and or not even logging into the portal, because you can sort of tell that the clients don't value it if they're not logging in and actually using it. But maybe that's how the business is being, you know, positioning the portal as well. You touched on tools like WeMoney and those other apps where you can connect your, you know, financial accounts. I noticed on, I think it was LinkedIn, you had a particular post about, or the Upworth profile did on credit scores and like credit reporting. Like, why do all those tools, and sorry for no sort of notice on this question, but why do all those tools embed like credit scores and credit reporting in there? Is that just a way for users to log in and check? Like, is it a way to ping someone? Like, why are they all using that as a feature?
Because it's something that has been widely successful in the US years ago. A company like Mint introduced that. Why is it successful? Because you basically tap into people's anxiety. So it's sad to say, but like basically people are anxious and you reduce complexity to a number. So the moment you say to people, look, there's a score about you and your ability to take credit. And if you don't look after this score, you are screwed in life. Yeah. Well, obviously you're going to get people extremely worried about it, right? And they're going to be like, I need to obsess about this. And again, you make it simple. You tell them, look, everything that you think is complex about finance, about your score. And so, you know, that's why that thing has worked extremely well. And that's why, you know, this is a great hook to get people to go into this app and look at it as an essential piece of information. The thing is, if you take a bit of perspective, yes, it's obviously an important factor, right? And it's definitely, don't get me wrong, you know, like it's definitely like an indicator, which is extremely important in your credit applications. And if you want to take a home loan, some lenders don't even consider you below certain scores. You tend to pay higher, you know, interest rates, yeah, obviously. But it's such a simplification of, you know, what financial wellness is, of like what financial advice is about. You know, it's like, it's not about that. But so that's basically the answer as to why this is so popular.
Okay. It makes sense. It is pesky. Yeah. And sorry, I'm jumping around as I always do in these episodes in terms of asking you one thing and going one pathway and then that. But
bring it up.
I'd love to, thank you. I would love to talk about the refinancing or home loan capabilities of Upworth. I noticed, as I said multiple times, I've created an account. I've sort of gone through that sort of user experience. Users might be sort of scared or delighted either way to learn that you can refinance in as little as 4 minutes. But I'd love to sort of learn about how you sort of built that process and, yeah, talk to us sort of about the you know, the automated refinancing aspect and, you know, whether a human or a broker gets involved on the other end, like just sort of talk to us about that functionality if you can.
Yeah, no, entirely. So look, you just, you know, for the sake of transparency as well. So when we talk about the 4 minutes, it's effectively when you have a complete Upworth profile. This is an important, you know, mention to make and because it's going to explain what I'm about to say. So what we did and, you know, when we designed Upworth is, and what I thought about is, okay, what is the sort of pain I'm going through when I make, you know, a financial product application, typically a mortgage? And basically, is it like it's time consuming, it's tedious, you know. And if you think about it, for three reasons, the first one is your financial information is abundant and dispersed, right? So it's time consuming and stressful. You need to like go and like fetch it. You don't know exactly where it is and everything. The second aspect is the parties that you must share your information with have no easy way to access that information. And the burden is on you. So it's manual and time consuming again. And finally, many times the processes to apply are ill-designed and they're not, you know, designed with your best experience in mind. So it's frustrating and it's time consuming. So if you take those three things, you know, I ask myself the question, okay, like how do I tackle those three things? And the answer is creating a financial passport with certified data. And this is effectively the third, you know, I talk about the three level of Upworth. This is the level three of Upworth. So why are we able to do it so quickly? Because we effectively digitized all the key questions that, you know, your basically your the compliance aspect of, you know, accessing consumer credit requires you to ask. You know, it's not that you can do whatever you want. You need to ask for, you know, customer objectives and situation. You need to also consider their preferences. You need to ensure they understand different products. Entirely digitized, so you can actually go pretty quickly into this. The key part about, you know, your financial data is if you have a, you know, a full Upworth profile, you're going to have in there your bank accounts, your superannuation, you could have, you know, your investment accounts, your properties, your existing mortgages. So everything that you need to collect, the point one I was mentioning before, is right in there, up to date. And with CDR data in the case of the bank accounts, so actually certified. So what we do is if you go through our process to refinance, you'll see that there is a step where you literally validate your financial information. You're like, I validate that one. I validate that one. I validate that one. You consent to this being shared. You push it to us and here you go. And you're going to be able to basically like book, you know, a phone call with the broker. Mm-hmm. We do believe, you know, like the process is not entirely digital and actually like legally, we also required, you know, to talk to you to understand who you are, your situation. But again, make it very easy. It's a digital call booking. It's something that you do at your convenience. And that's how, you know, like pushing that application takes about 4 minutes. So it doesn't mean you're going to get to decisioning in 4 minutes.
Of course.
But it means that in 4 minutes, we're going to be able to, in fact, in 1 minute, we're going to be able to tell you which mortgages would be the best for you, because you're going to tell us like, this is what I want, this is my preference, my product. Since, you know, back to what I said at the beginning, since we scan the entire market, we can give you, you know, like the best possible options. And in about 4 minutes, you're going to be able to push all of that information. So that's how it happens. And yes, it's basically a hybrid solution. So it's a solution where all of the burden, we are trying to reduce it to a minimal amount for you as a user. And then we work in the background. We are basically mortgage brokers, integrated mortgage brokers. And we do basically all the work, you know, that needs to be done in this capacity. And you have the ability to interact with a mortgage broker. You could literally talk to us. We also have a chat, literally talk to a mortgage broker who's, licensed to do so directly in the chat in our platform.
Wow. So you've eliminated or not eliminated, you've made the experience of data gathering and providing data a really easy experience for users or consumers. That's traditionally a valueless activity for a human or a broker to say, I need, you know, this checklist, which is just a manual email of pay slips and bank statements and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
So, I mean, and it's a hybrid solution as well. So my understanding would be that this has the potential to be like an incredibly efficient way for clients of financial planning firms to either refinance or obtain finance as part of their strategy. So whether that's, you know, borrowing to invest or renovations or whatever the strategy is that something that's on the radar or are you already working with firms in that way? What are your sort of comments?
No, there? Entirely. Look, this is exactly the horizon. You know, like Upwork is there to give you the full view, give you the insights you need to have, the right insights, and then allow you to act on those insights. Again, without delivering the advice. And I think that's why, you know, I very much welcome also the opportunity to come and talk on this podcast, because the reality is we are very open, you know, to work with basically the financial advisor community. We don't see ourselves as, you know, advisors. In fact, we're not licensed to do that. And we don't want to do that. You know, that in fact would be illegal of us. That's not our job. We see our positioning, which I said in the beginning, as being different, you know, as being like a technology provider. And so I think there is a lot of room here for whoever is willing to partner, to definitely partner on that front. And we believe we can bring tremendous value, simplify, you know, life and greatly improve also the relationship with the advisor for all the reasons mentioned. You know, I mean, we didn't go into it, but if you think about it, and we have actually financial advisor who told us so, we basically automate the information collection, which is usually very painful and usually also very inaccurate. So many times, and I think some of your listeners, you probably relate to it as an advisor, you have to go after your clients. It's not the best way to start a relationship, to ask all this information. It's inaccurate, which has an impact on the quality of what you're going to do as an analysis. Then you have the burden of actualizing this information all the time. And then actually you don't necessarily have a common denominator, a common base to have quality conversation. This is what we solve, right? And then you can focus on the value add, which is the advice and really coming on top. And in fact, improving your productivity, because it's all the time that you were spending before on those non-value add activities, even if you do outsource them to, you know, resources on the side, you're still involved in this and you still have to manage impact on relationships. This is all now taken care of, basically.
Yeah. No, amazing. I think, yeah, most of us as sort of financial planning advisors, I'm retired, by the way, financial planning advisors or advice professionals have had at least one poor experience where we've introduced a client to a broker. And, you know, whether that's from a communication perspective or data perspective, where it just hasn't gone smoothly. And, you know, you can always sort of feel like that the client isn't their priority as well. So, yeah, there's nothing better than a sort of warm referral or warm handball when you know that the experience is going to be consistent. It's going to be quick, as you sort of alluded to there about the sort of 4 minutes of, you know, a totally complete Upwork profile. And that's another incentive to make sure it is complete as well, right?
Like, correct.
This process will be quicker if everything's there. Obviously, we're talking about a lot of data being provided and sort of flying around. I think you've sort of mentioned on the website and on LinkedIn sort of military grade security. Do you mind sort of talking about that and what that actually means?
Yeah, no, this is super key. So actually, thanks for providing me the opportunity to detail that. And I think it takes on two aspects, right? Which is both cyber security and data privacy. And I sort of like to divide it this way because they're a bit distant. On the cyber security side, I think if one thing, you know, like the access we have to CDR actually requires us to comply with quite a long list of security requirements. You cannot access this regime just like this, effectively.
Sure.
And so what we do is, yes, we basically encrypt all communications. So we will encrypt your data, you say basically at rest and in transit. So at rest, it means on our servers. So the data here is encrypted with the highest level of data encryption. And we also encrypt the data in transit, that is to say between our databases and your browser. So that's the first thing, that is actually encrypted. Second cybersecurity measure we have is, and I think that's very important to mention, is we actually don't have any access to your login credentials. I know it can sound a bit surprising because people are like, but wait a minute, I'm actually logging in. And
yeah.
So why are you saying this? Is that doesn't make sense, right? So I log in and you tell me you don't have the login. What the hell are you saying? Actually, no. Why? For two reasons. The first one is we do not actually perform that activity ourselves. It's performed through a partner company. So in our case, on the CDR side, we work with AdaTrip, was basically like a dedicated professional service firm that does that for us. And the added thing is that when you do use the CDR regime, so the official Australian government regime, you actually don't enter any password. If you have gone through the experience, you may have noticed, you're going to enter your client number and your bank is going to send you an OTP, a one-time password, on your mobile or in your app, which basically is an added security. You're not sharing your password. The case
just
is when
you... back.
Yeah,
you're
please.
Right. Yeah, well.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. The case is when you do share your password is because we have to go through what's called scraping. And I'm sure you know some of your listeners will.
I was going to say the good old days, but the questionable old days of before CDR, right? In terms of actually physically logging in, which would actually render, at least in the past, if you had fraudulent activity on your account, your bank could be like, well, no, you've logged into something else that's actually not authorized. Sorry, I've definitely cut you off there, Alex.
No, worries. No, it's a conversation. but look, on scraping, we effectively, we still have to use it because all the assets are not accessible in the CDR
regime.
So superannuation, investment accounts, that's the only way we can access it. But even in that case, so yes, you do enter your login and your password, but we do not access it. Basically, we do work with a partner, a third party. We can't access it. As a third level, we do not have any right to take action on your account. We have a read-only access. So even if, you know, you connect your accounts, I cannot decide to do something. I cannot do anything on your account. Yeah. So I think, like, it's sort of like a list of security, you know, measures we are taking. I think, you know, on the privacy side I was mentioning at the beginning, it's super important to us as well. So basically, we obviously respect like data privacy laws in Australia. All the data is stored in Australia and we use AWS with, you know, Australia-based servers. And we actually have gone even further. So if you go into your account, you have the ability to disconnect or delete any account you've connected in 5 clicks. And so many people have told me like, this is very stupid, Alex. Like, you know, you shouldn't allow your user to leave in 5 clicks. It's like, look, I haven't created Upwork to lock people in my world. This is not the point, you know. You control Upwork. Upwork does not control you. And so, in fact, it is important for me that you can disconnect very quickly. And once you disconnect, not only do we stop to read your account, but we also erase all the historical data that we had accrued. The downside is, well, if you want to bring that account back, well, we'll have lost the history and you'll lose the quality of insights that comes from that loss. But I think, you know, and thanks again, it's important to mention that right to oblivion is key to us.
Yeah. Now, I think I would sort of make a similarity to maybe it's far-reaching, but sort of no lock-in contracts. Like the ability, the door is always open, which is a really easy way to build more trust as well, right? Like you can leave at any time. We're not holding you ransom. If it's not right for you, then it's not right for you. So I think that's I think it's a great feature, to be honest, and circumstances do change and all that sort of thing. But I would also just ask on the like, yes, we have the CDR, so the Consumer Data Right and open banking. Have you found it difficult to, like, in terms of the experience of when you connect that account, you only get that data from the date it's connected? Have you experienced in that sort of catch 22 of the open banking regime where you've got data from a point in time and not historical data? So it's really on the user to get it connected ASAP and then sort of reap the benefits of tracking progress over time, maybe 2 or 3 months in?
So look, yeah, CDR is still some way to go. You know, like, there's no expert in this country that will tell you that it's all perfect. And so what we find is at times the connections fail. And so obviously, you know, like, our user will turn to us and be like, you know, our process doesn't work. Well, it's more complex sometimes. Yeah, we do have a failure on our side, and, you know, we assume that we work out to repair it. But many times it's in fact that this very connection doesn't work through the system and the pipeline of the CDR. Right. You know? And so that still happens too often. The other thing linked to what you said is the data that comes in is uneven. Some CDR participants, the data holders as they are called, do provide extremely good data. I won't mention banks on that podcast at the point, you know, to like shame and reward, but some banks actually have done a very good job. And like we see, you know, over and over is that we get very good data from them. Some banks on the flip side are passing to us very bad data. You'll be appalled. Yeah. There are times, you know, we connect a mortgage, all we receive can be, you know, original mortgage balance. This is actually not at all what the bank should be sharing with us. What we've found, though, is that, look, there are ways around it, you know, like there are ways to enrich this data, to like pass it together. So you, as a user, you wouldn't necessarily experience that. You wouldn't see those failure points, because we worked actually to create a journey where we make sure that what's going to be saved in the process is correct. And at times we may ask you, hey, spend 30 seconds. Here is everything we have been able to pre-populate. And if you connected a bank account, you probably went through this experience. What you saw is, you connect something and then you're going to have those validation screens, right?
Yeah.
And you may have seen, oh, that's cool, you know, like everything is populated, or maybe sometimes something was not there, you know, and you're like, okay, all I have to do is say that it's like this, but it's fine. You know, it takes you 2 seconds, you review it, you validate. That's how we have walked around, you know, the issue we're seeing with the data access and data quality in open banking.
And then I guess by default as well, that sort of consent period, I know this is not limited to Upworth, but that consent period is a maximum of 1 year, right?
Like, correct.
Are users needing to sort of reconsent every year or go through that process again? How does that sort of work?
Exactly as you're saying. So it's basically a legal, it's a legal constraint. Like the max amount of time you can connect or you can consent to share your data is 1 year. In a way, I mean, it's a good protection, right? I mean, it participates in this period of saying the goal is not to lock you in. You know, if in 1 year time you're like, look, I did not necessarily love it, or, you know, I didn't get what I wanted out of it. It's not that you have forgotten it and, whoa, you know, we get all of your data without you not even realizing anymore. Fair enough. You know, we believe that hopefully we will have convinced you and you will actually be like, damn it, I'm going to lose access. I'm going to lose the insights, you know. So I'm honestly like, pretty comfortable with it.
Yeah. No, cool. It makes sense. And it's, a relevant level of sort of urgency to say, do I want to keep using this tool?
Exactly.
Or maybe you've gone through a year ago, you know, 7 different personal finance apps and they're all trying to reconsent and you go, jeepers, I forgot I had those apps on my phone even though I deleted them, you know, 6 months ago. So it makes total sense. From a type of consumer or type of user, is Upworth sort of, are you suited to everyone or is it at the moment probably more, I'm not going to say simple, but maybe consumers or users that maybe don't have additional entities, they might have, you know, PAYG, so sort of standard either joint or individual accounts, as well as maybe a retail or an industry super fund? Or would it cater for maybe a business owner or someone with maybe a complex structure as well?
So, yeah, look, love the question. I think we created Upworth to basically cater to like a wide spectrum. So what you'll find is you're able to like leave it pretty simple and be like, look, I'm just going to collect 1-2 bank accounts. I don't have anything else. You can do this. They will be very quick, in fact. And we are working these days actually to add more insights on this. Tell you, for instance, could you earn more, you know, on your savings account and automate that for free for people?
Right.
So that's already a good value, basically. And we don't get paid for that by contrast to other players in this market. So actually independent. I think, you know, We have built it so that you're able to entirely build your personal financial operating system, to call it this way. Think of a process like a gigantic Excel, way friendlier, where you don't have to write the formulas
everything
yourself.
A spreadsheet. Yep.
Exactly. And understand, you know, like what you don't need to have the knowledge to build the entire system. The system is built for you and is distilled to you as a simple enough console. Why am I saying this? Because you could actually like use Upwork at a pretty advanced level. You could add in there 10 properties that, you know, could be in 10 different countries. We will automatically handle the different currencies. We will automate all the metrics to track your properties. You could basically enter, you know, a bank account. You could enter, a private equity position that you enter manually. You can actually even say it's in this trust to allow you to track things by holding or attaching them to a trust. You can say like legal entity. Say, okay, trust Patrick. Cool. You can put under that legal entity as many holdings as you want. And then you can actually track the performance of that entity or of the, of the, you know, the single holding. Another thing is think about SMSF. So something we're working on, you know, like usually many people would potentially have SMSF, not necessarily superannuation retail fund, as you mentioned. We are like the good thing with SMSF is like about 97% of the SMSF administration market is held by three software providers.
Yeah, okay.
So effectively, the question, like people approach the question saying, oh, I'm going to do this. SMSF is discrete, could be anything.
Yeah.
Exactly. But it's actually not that wild from an integration perspective. You're basically 97% of the market are three providers. And so we already have Class Super, which is 50% that, you know, is available in the platform. BGL, you know, Super Concept are the ones we're working on. But so I think the answer I want to provide to you is you can go very simple or you can go very far, right? And so it caters to like quite a wide spectrum. And we keep building. We are in fact like very open in our approach to say, look, please give us ideas. You know, you told me at the beginning, oh, you know, like that thing I like, you know, coming soon. Our mindset is like, hey, tell us what you want to see there. And when we are basically like, we are co-developing with you guys.
Yeah. Awesome. No, that's really great. I guess just on that, like I know there's obviously a roadmap for this product, but are you able to give us any insight into what is on the development path or anything that maybe is sort of years down the track, but you'd love to see in the platform if the data was there or if it was, you know, able to click your fingers and it would appear tomorrow?
Yeah, look, so I don't think in years, Patrick, I think in weeks, in days. It's basically like we live on a very short time span. So basically, I guess, you know, like three big things that we are working on. We're working on them because our users told us, look, those are the things, you know, we're the most excited about, or the things that we don't see in there today and we would like to see. And as I said, you know, that's we live and die by what the people ask us. And so there are three things fundamentally. One is around Gen AI, and I can say more about this in a minute.
Yeah.
One is around cash flow management, and one is around worldwide account coverage. Gen AI, look, we are working on products that will probably be, you know, Australia's first in the field, possibly worldwide.
Yeah.
Basically, take your banking app, right? And imagine that all of a sudden, it has a view of all your assets and liabilities, and you are able to chat seamlessly as if you'll be talking with a person, right? And imagine that, let's take an example. Imagine you want to buy a house, right? But you have no clue where to start. It's a very common situation and you may relate. I mean, in that field, or, you know, that happens all the time. People come to me, they're like, I want to buy a house, but I don't know. So what happens, right? I mean, that system will tell you, all right, let's break down the problem, right? Okay, which house price can you afford? Let's start there, you know, and what do you want to do with house? You want to invest? You want to live in? Okay, cool, right? How much will it cost you per month? How big of a deposit do you need? How could you save and how long would it take, you know, to save that deposit? Will you be able to, you'll be able to have that conversation in real time, right? And the thing is, we've already done a big part of like having the rules that, you know, will inform that system. And this is really a priority to us. What the way we see this is, our aim is you have a valuable AI copilot and that can be, you know, someone that answers all your analytical questions. Again, no advice. This is really like the line we are following. And we see this as a great tool for advisors as well, create the kind of hybrid advice that client asks for today. effectively a large chunk of questions of analysis can be automated. And because of that innovation of, you know, generative AI can now be addressed in a natural language manner, which is probably the description of the customer experience. And then again, the advisor can focus on providing the advice, you know, like there is a ring fence where we say, look, you're now asking me an advice, you know, like, I mean, I told you to think about purchasing that property. I help you figure out, you know, what is within your means because your bank account is connected, because I see your entire wealth. So I did an analysis, but I cannot tell you if the right thing to do is that or that. Well, talk to your advisor. Maybe it's a client who already has an advisor and we're like, should turn to him, or do you want to talk to an advisor? That becomes, you know, the possibility to refer those people to an advisor because they realize they have qualified a need. And in fact, they'll be way more engaged and way more inclined to talk to that advisor.
Definitely. I think that is so cool. I mean, the time it takes now, like if you just wanted to query that Copilot on how much you've spent on, I don't know, dining out this month, like that would just be as simple as asking that question naturally. Correct. Rather than jumping into whatever card or bank accounts and exporting that to Excel and trying to find the category that way. Like that's
correct.
That's a really basic example.
But it's a great example because that example is actually so like to manage expectations, you know, like what we want to do first is actually work on bank accounts and work on the whole mortgage space, which being mortgage brokers is quite natural to us and we understand well, right? And so the question you just popped is a very good one because it's actually one that comes very, very often.
Okay.
People actually ask many times, you know, like, what am I spending? What am I spending on? And interestingly enough, that's something that today your bank applications will give you, but somehow people are not completely satisfied with that. They want to be able to interact more with that information. As you said, they want to understand the trends, you know.
I'm with you. And people don't always use the same bank for every category of expense, right? Or even income.
You said it. You took the word out of my mouth, which is Upwork connects all your bank accounts. But I think it's an important one, which is the limitation of a bank is by design. They will always push their own products in their interest because they are basically both product provider and a distribution channel. And so it's in their interest to push their own thing. And they will rarely give you that entire view, which is the value we aim to provide, you know, and to tell you, look, we are connecting all your accounts and you can query that. So yeah, look, that Gen AI aspect is a big thing we're working on, and, you know, cash flow management and worldwide account coverage, which I'm happy to delve into as well.
Yeah. No, I'd love to hear more about cash flow and worldwide account coverage. Yeah, if you wanted to give us some cliff notes on that, that'd be much appreciated.
Yeah, no, sure. Look, on cash flow management, I guess if you get it, take a step back, and you probably have seen it, you know, in Upwork. Today we automate the balance sheet creation and actualization and counting tabs, right? And clients, you know, users told us, look, I love it, but I like the cash flow side of things. You know, where's the cash flow statement? Where's the P&L, right, as well?
Yep.
P&L is a little bit more complex. Takes, you know, like dividends, you know, like you start going into things where, you know, maybe you don't capture it through the bank account. So I don't want to get into the technicalities, but what we realized is people are actually very excited about the cash flow side of things first, because it touches on their expenses, as you said, you know, it's like what flows in, what flows out, their income, like which ties up with their borrowing capacity, service ability. So you touch on that single aspect as well. And so what we're working on today is being able to add that element and really giving you, in the same spirit of what we have done today, it's working on visualization to be very creative on the visualization side. So not have a boring list of expense by category, but visualize things in a way where you understand proportionally, you know, how things flow from one side to the other, like how it changes through time, really like giving you that understanding and some granularity around income as well, not just inflow, like what is inside inflow, you know? So we're working on that. We found that talking to advisors, that's also something they welcome and something super critical to their work, you know? And the last one, you know, worldwide account coverage. Look, simple analysis, like 30% of the population in Australia is born abroad. It's mind blowing to me, you know? So like it tells you a lot about the diversity of the country, but it also is a very interesting angle because 30% of the population typically retains links with the rest of the world. And those links are also financial. Whether, you know, they still have a bank account there, whether they own a property, whether they help their family invest in the local, you know, interest. And so what we found, you know, is people told us, oh, wait a minute, this is next level. You know, if actually I can connect my thing in Australia, but all of a sudden I can connect my accounts in France and in the UK, in the US, and I can have in one place that entire view that I can never reconcile, where the currency aspect is also taken care of. Wow, I will love it. You know, I pay for that. That's been a typical answer. So I think that one personally excites me a lot. You know, like that vision of, you know, giving you that worldwide view is super exciting.
Yeah. So, yeah, instead of everything in one place, asterisks, and the asterisk is Australian assets only, that it makes total sense. And, yeah, as advisors or retired advisors, yeah, there's always that percentage of clients that do have international assets, and you probably don't even talk about them because you're in Australia and talking about their Australian assets, and then that comes up and you get this magical statement which is in a different currency, and, you know, is it included in the advice? Is it not? Does it go on the balance sheet? Does the income get included? And there's sort of obviously legal restrictions too on providing advice on assets outside Australia, but I think it makes total sense to have, as you said, everything in one place. And yeah, just on the cash flow side, like that is a massively underserved scope of advice, especially in financial planning firms, but it's probably one of the most powerful, especially from a accountability point of view and being able to actually tell someone or project to someone, as in clients, whether they're on track or whether they're going to be able to meet their objectives or goals or not, and what needs to change. Like, it's a really good and easy way to provide accountability and just say, like, hold up, why are we spending this much on this? Or even in a more sort of positive sentiment, you know, you're essentially saving too much for what your objectives are. So, you know, don't feel guilty in spending more on maybe this holiday or upgrading to business class or things like that. So I think they're three incredibly powerful roadmap items, which I'll be really excited to log in the next few weeks. I think you alluded to, Alex, and see them live on the platform. I'm joking. But yeah, Alex, thank you so much.
You're being tough on me, Patrick. Good one, good one.
I'm definitely just playing around. But yeah, Alex, I really appreciate your time and thank you so much for sharing everything Upworth. I'm really excited to see where this platform goes and whether it sort of ends up in the hands of advisors as well or advice practices. But what's the best way for someone to learn more about the platform or yourself?
I guess, look, first, thanks a lot, you know, for having me, Patrick. I mean, when you reached out, I was like, yes, this is a really cool idea, you know, and so it's been a very enjoyable conversation. Hopefully, it will be a great segment for everyone listening to it. And saying thanks, you know, for giving a try also to the platform. I guess in terms of, you know, reaching out, I guess, create an account, of course, probably, you know, one thing. It's free. You know, something we didn't mention for this conversation, it's actually you can create and access those tools for free. So it's probably something you may want to check. Then again, you know, as I said throughout this segment, we are very open to any collaboration. So you can reach out to me. You know, my name, I'm sure, will be displayed as you distribute this podcast. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn. You can write to me. I'll even give my email address. Maybe I will reread it. So you can write to me to alex@upworth. So UPWORTH, upworth.com.au. And literally, let's take it from there. I think the whole mindset is to grow LNA and also with the advisor community. That's the goal.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah, all relevant links and info will be in the show notes. So, once again, thank you, Alex.
Thank you so much, Patrick. Thanks a lot.